I turned back to find Rifkin's wife, Joan, had appeared beside him. She had some of her husband's miniature doll-like quality. She was small and slim and had a lovely face. Her frosted blonde hair was cut in a pixie. She must have been very beautiful once. She still had the vivacious actressy manner of a woman who knows how to use her looks. But she was fading now. Her face was gaunt and her eyes bugged slightly, with years, with stress, with grief. I had met her several times over the years before all this happened. She never remembered who I was. Now the two of them stared at us. Dan hardly moved. His keys dangled from his hooked index finger without jangling. His consternation or surprise or whatever he was feeling barely registered on his face. Joan's face was more animated. She glared, offended by our presence here. No one had to say anything. It was a matter of numbers. We were three, they were two. One son was here, the other gone. The simple fact of Jacob's continued existence must have seemed profane to them. It was also painfully obvious and awkward that the five of us stood there dumbstruck for a moment, gaping at each other while the commotion of the market went on around us. I told Jacob, "Why don't you go wait in the car?" "Okay." He began to move off. The Rifkins still stared. I had decided immediately not to say anything unless they initiated the conversation. It was impossible to imagine what I could say that would not be painful or tactless or provocative. But Lori wanted to speak. Her desire to walk over to them was palpable. With great effort, she was restraining herself. I find it touching and almost naive how complete is my wife's faith in communication and connection. To her, there is virtually no problem that does not benefit from a little talk, talk, talk. What is more, she genuinely believed that the case was somehow a shared misfortune, that our family was suffering also, that it was no easy thing to see your son wrongly accused of murder, to see his life ruined for no good reason. The tragedy of Ben Rifkin's murder did not lessen the tragedy of Jake's own victimization. I don't think Lori meant to say any of this. She is much too empathetic. I think she just wanted to communicate her sympathy somehow, to connect with the usual banality of, "I'm so sorry for your loss," or some such. Lori said, "Lori," I cut her off, "go wait in the car with Jacob. I'll pay for the stuff."